everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and welcome to Points on the Board, where I bring you tales where politics and sports intersect. And tonight's episode is on ESPN, their credibility and integrity, questioning their talent and journalism. Is their brand and its mission tainted for good? We'll also talk Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson. He's being attacked for a retweet. Plus, the final whistle with time permitting, as we've got a fully packed show. But before we begin, do not forget to bookmark grumblingsmedia.com and follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, eSpotify under the handle Grumblings Media. Oh, do not forget, give me that thumbs up and share this podcast once we're done here. I appreciate all the support. Okay, so let's get right to it. ESPN's credibility crisis, Sanders gaffe, fuels mockery and outrage. I guess the best way to do this is let's start it with a video here. Let me do a little bit of screen share here, and let's do it. Oh, let me fix this first so you can see the full view here with no obstructions. Here we go.
Jersey. Let's get into it, because obviously this ties to one Shador Sanders, who balled out in his first
game. No.
I'm sorry about that.
How embarrassing can you get? Seriously. Monica McNutt, Barry Sanders blunder. What that did is it exposed a deeper fault line in ESPN's hiring practices from when they first started. Faults their analysis prep and creates a distrust with the audience. So look, Monica McNutt guest hosted First Take with Stephen A. Smith. You know, again, that show is he's being paid, what, $100 million over, what, 10 years, I guess? That show only gets about 600,000 viewers an episode, and it's considered one of the better shows. It shows how badly network television, how badly sports is right now in terms of bringing great analytical takes to television. They're failing, and that includes Stephen A. Smith. Now, this guy here, his name is Drusky. He's a comedian. And what he was doing is he was wearing a backwards Detroit Lions number 20 jersey. Anybody who's watched football knows that's Barry Sanders. You know, Drusky corrected her. No. This is Barry Sanders. I mean, I can see the confusion Shedeur Sanders plays for the Cleveland Browns. You know, number 12 and number 20 are close. The silver and the brown and orange, the silver and blue and the brown and orange, they look so closely together. I can see how Monica McNutt screwed it up. Oh, this is pathetic. McNutt just renewed her contract last October. And here's what she's famous for. Comments on Caitlin Clark. Quote, white girl from middle America. Unquote. Quote, I'm not going to say that one. In essence, she's known as a bigot who's also a racist. And she criticizes Caitlin Clark because she is white. The truth of the matter is Monica McNutt did everything but say it. She alluded to it. She hinted at it. She said it in different ways. But what she has said pretty much is that the league was built on queer and black in terms of the women and their lifestyles. And that's what it should remain. And they're the ones who should be honored, not this little white girl from the Midwest. My thoughts overall is, all Monica McNutt did was expose. She's an idiot. She's an idiot. You do not get a job at ESPN as an analyst and not know who Barry Sanders is. I'm not a hockey fan, but I can tell you the major milestones with hockey. College basketball. When it comes to the Olympics, all the major sports. Monica McNutt can't even tell you who one of the greatest running backs, arguably one of the greatest players, if not the greatest players in NFL history is. Disgraceful. Pathetic, disgusting. And to me, that's a fireable offense. Get the hell out. And not only that, I'll fire whoever brought her on. I'm not the only one who feels this way. Fan outrage erupted immediately. Quote, she works for ESPN and doesn't know Barry Sanders? And they wonder why ratings are down. Dave Portnoy of Barstool Sports. This is next level stupid here, unquote. That received 53,000 likes and millions of views. Jason Whitlock, quote, Monica McNutt actually mistook Driskey's Barry Sanders jersey for a Shadur jersey. It's embarrassing. We've gone completely nuts, unquote. Look, some of her supporters and ESPN supporters are like, hey, invite Barry Sanders on there wearing Shadur Sanders jersey. Use humor to flip the narrative. Trust is already gone. And, you know, here's a great, I follow this guy. He's a class act in my eyes. By class act, meaning he's not going to succumb to the woke. He's going to speak the truth, and he comes at it hard. This is what he said. The great Tony Bruno. Before getting hired to help launch at ESPN Radio in 1992, I was asked to identify the third line of the Canucks. 23 years later, ESPN employs Monica McNutt, who had no idea who Barry Sanders was. DEI dunce. I can ask that better. Well said, Tony. Well said. I hope to have Tony as a guest here one day. We do follow each other. He probably remembers me from my KFFL days when I had one of the top fantasy sports sites in the world before I sold it. So, that's what the standard was back then. Now, the standard is DEI, gender and color. And all McNutt does is show how badly ESPN is failing. I mean, that's pretty much about it from that perspective. So, some of the responses internally, Outkick has sources there, and they were telling Outkick there was embarrassment. Quote, I like Monica, but, unquote. It was, they felt the brand was being damaged. Producers and management are frustrated at they gotta be frustrated at the fact she's a DEI hire and they're kind of stuck with her. The error is inexcusable. I agree with the analysts just saying that. It's not just a blunder. She lacks any history of sports. She doesn't do any prep work. She's an illiterate buffoon when it comes to sports. And she's a racist and a bigot. Now, someone proposed ESPN implement a sports history quiz for hosts. You know, I can see that. Look, if they sat there and quizzed Tony Bruno, before hiring him, then by God, bring that back. I have no qualms with that. This woke, what we saw is the epitome of woke. What we saw in Monica McNutt is the equivalent of Ketanji Brown Jackson at the Supreme Court, where she wrote like a 90-page diatribe on how feelings, nothing but my feelings, should dictate legalese. It's like, you got two morons who were hired not because of qualifications. So what's the broader media analysis and framing here? Somebody joked said, oh, ESPN is becoming the TMZ of sports networks. They were being sarcastic. Oh, my goodness. The consensus is simple. ESPN is prioritizing race, gender, and ideology over actual qualifications. I mean, it's not just McNutt, Dennis, David Dennis Jr., Ryan Clark, Ellie Duncan. They're all horrific excuses for analysts. If the player they like doesn't succeed, it's because of racism. If it's not the team that's racist, if it's not the owner that's racist, it's the fans that are racist. Oh, man. So, Monica McNutt hasn't come out with a statement since she apologized, I think, on air. No comment, no response. Now, today she was not featured. in the first 90 minutes. And that means it was Smith, Orlovsky, Schechter, and Tannenbaum. Now, I don't think this is a disciplinary issue, or maybe it was pre-scheduled. But maybe it's like, we got to keep you off the air so you don't bring the show down. So let's be blunt. This wasn't just a slippery miss. You know, you slide down, you overshoot your target. This was a credibility collapse, or as I see it, validation of DEI at its worst. An analyst so clueless, it's beyond being out of their element. Because she was so bad at that moment, she completely tainted not just the show, not just her fellow co-hosts, but the complete brand of ESPN. I mean, ESPN's leadership, Jimmy Pitaro, Burke Magnus, Dave Roberts, in a way, they're facing a choice. Keep this subpar standard of how you hire people based off their gender and color, or go back to merit-based standards. There's a lot of black athletes on there that actually know what they're talking about. This has nothing to do with you're black and you don't know. It's everything to do with she's a moron and she doesn't know. Plenty of black football players, Latino baseball players, basketball players are black and white. I mean, there's plenty of that, but they need it to be merit. They're trying to do to her what they did to Bomani Jones. Elevate pathetic excuses that they call talent. I mean, Dennis Jr. is one of the worst over there. They've got to get rid of that. When analysts can't identify legends like Barry Sanders, it's not just embarrassing, it's pathetic and destructive to the ESPN brand. It damages trust. It alienates viewers. It weakens the network's authority. And if ESPN continues to elevate unqualified voices, the integrity of sports media itself could be on the line. This moment isn't just about Monica McNutt. It's about whether ESPN still values expertise or if it's lost the plot entirely by giving way to DEI hires. Long are the days of Tony Bruno being tested on his sports knowledge before being offered a job. Now it's checking the boxes. Faith, politics, and the Lamar Jackson firestorm. So, a simple repost, it's all about Jesus, from Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson, ignites a national controversy, exposing default lines and how athlete faith is interpreted through political lenses. Let me show you the post I am referring to here. Let me make it here. Let's see. Notice right here, Lamar Jackson reposted Charlie Kirk. It's all about Jesus. 5.3 million views at the time I cut this. And this just came out just yesterday. Boy, that's some serious popularity. So, Lamar Jackson reposted Charlie Kirk's message. It's all about Jesus. Now, Kirk is known as a conservative activist. He supports Donald Trump, as I do, and I'm, yo soy Latino, idiota. No venga conmigo en esa basura de racista esto y racista eso, porque usted es cualquier racista, no yo. Translation, don't come at me with your nonsense. I'm Latino. You want to play the race card? Look in the mirror. It's pretty much what I was saying in that show. Regardless, Kirk is known for conservative activism. Again, support for Donald Trump, as I support him, and opposition to DEI policies. As you can tell, I support. Do away with those. Have merit-based hires. Meritocracy for college entrances. Meritocracy across the board. Why DEI is divisive and anti-meritocratic. I mean, who can forget MLK's content of character? You can't. See, when I see a lot of progressives, and I don't care if they're white, black, Latino, or what, talking MLK, And then I look at their post. I'm like, they're using him. Okay. And then they get mad when you use it. How dare you? How dare you? I can use it because he's American. How dare you talk about this person if you're not of that culture or that color? Just throw it back in their face. That's what you have to do to defeat these bigots and these racists. I like Lamar Jackson. Why? Because he's a godly person. He's a great role model. He's who you want your kids to look up to. I mean, his X profile regularly features Bible verses, baptisms, and faith-centered posts. Yeah, so he's pretty much had no prior controversy. A couple of dumb decisions, like trying to sue Aikman, I believe, for or finding them with something to do with the patent from number 8. Regardless, after the repost, Jackson followed with 5 additional Christian messages, including God is good. So this repost was consistent with what he usually does. The public reaction to polarization? Kirk is outright racist and would easily throw Lamar to the cotton fields. Not true. Absolutely not true. That I guarantee you, I go to that guy's timeline, I will find racist quote after racist quote. Hope he continues to choke in the playoffs. Because he believes in God, or it's all about Jesus, this guy wants him to fail the playoffs. Lamar retweeting a very known racist. Charlie Kirk is not a racist. He'll debate anybody. He'll go toe-to-toe. He doesn't go toe-to-toe with anybody. He takes them out. Because he easily breaks down their lies. When you are well-informed as we are, it's easy. I always tell people here at Grunts and Media, well, let's go debate it. The only time I kind of get in trouble is when I let my emotions. Well, when I stay on point, it's easy to destroy somebody. I remember we were talking about Guantanamo or Bay, and they have humanist groups, overseeing that whole process. They allow them to come in, inspect, check it out. And I just ate up the person who was saying this, and this. And I was like, well, you do know they have those groups that do come in. And none of that's happening. Because they're not reporting what you're accusing, which means you didn't do any research, which means it's just tedious and hate, which is typical of your lot. And defenders had to point out the obvious. He just saw the caption and reposted. It's not the message, it's just because it's Charlie Kirk. Sage Steele, criticizing someone because of their religious beliefs, just stop. Somebody was like, Lamar Jackson retweeting who? They didn't know who Charlie Kirk was. But support grew. John Root called the backlash unwarranted. Others affirmed it's about Jesus. I actually have a John Root. I think I have the John Root tweet here. Do I? I guess I don't. Huh. Go figure. Oh, I know where I have it at. Let me dig it out here for you, my friends. Let's see. Here it is. All right. Yeah, I thought I had it. So what John Root says is, or better yet, let me just post it up here for you guys. And I'll make it a little bit bigger. So you can see it. But in essence, John Root called it as. Oh, no. It was not John Root. It was, okay. My apologies on that, my friends. My apologies. John Root was talking about Monica McNutt and DEI and her criticism of Caitlyn because she's white. And I chose not to post that one. So I apologize. But it is all about Jesus. And these are haters. And so I push back. And I can vilify as good as anybody, but I never started. I'm reacting to the hate out there. I believe you fight fire with fire. And that doesn't mean you fight hate with hate. What you do is you're not afraid to push back. They go, shut the hell up. And I push back with facts as you must. For us to win this battle, we must do that. Now, this was nothing but a liberal meltdown and all hell broke loose. The backlash was fake news. It was a faux. It was like, oh, how dare you? How dare you what? You don't believe in God as it is anyway. The Ravens have a culture of religious. Coach Jim Harbaugh, he quotes scripture. He dedicates his wins to God. Did you know that the Gen Z Christian identification is growing? 45% in 2023 of Gen Zers identified as Christians. God-fearing, 51% in 2025. It says it was a leftist mob that attacked Lamar Jackson. He probably didn't care. I don't blame him. There's no formal statement from the Ravens, NFL, or even Jackson. So this was much ado about nothing. It just shows how unhinged the left get. Look, Charlie Kirk wears his Christianity openly. So does Lamar Jackson. And that's the real trigger. The attacks weren't about theology. They were about silencing faith when it's not progressive approved. The irony? Most of the backlash came from Democrats, the self-declared party of tolerance. But their tolerance ends where Christianity begins, especially when it's unapologetic, public, and unfiltered. What we saw wasn't just disagreement. It was a blackness of hate. Deep, visceral, and gleefully amplified by progressives who treat faith as a threat. The left may hate Kirk's politics, but they fear his conviction, and they fear Lamar's unapologetic belief. Because belief, real belief, isn't easily manipulated, and that's dangerous to a party built on emotional control. I'm not a fundamentalist. I grew up around it. I know its flaws, but I also know this. We've lost our way, and a little bit of God is always good for the soul. Without it, we get what we saw this week, a soulless group party weaponizing hate and calling it progress. All right, ESPN kills Kaepernick docuseries. But why now? So ESPN is now proceeding with Spike Lee's Colin Kaepernick docuseries that absolutely nobody was asking for anyway. That was the title by Mark Harris. I think that was an outkick. I thought it was just a great title. So Spike Lee's multi-year documentary on Colin Kaepernick got ads by ESPN, officially due to creative differences. But the timing, just days after ESPN's financial merger with the NFL, well, look, it's raising deeper questions about corporate censorship, ideological fatigue, and a selective shelf life of progressive martyrdom, all the above. So it did have to do with ESPN's financial merger and corporate censorship to protect the product. But we're also suffering ideological fatigue from all the hate that everybody tried. It's hard to keep hate at a high emotion, and that's what Kaepernick kept doing. And Kaepernick's come and gone. The NFL's done with that nonsense. So, this docuseries was announced in 2020 under Kaepernick's first look deal with Disney via Raw Vision Media. Spike Lee joined in 2022 to direct a full first-person account of Kaepernick's journey of hate. They promised extensive interviews of bigots, racists, liars. They promised unseen footage. I'm going to say with a lot of reenactments. And the 7-episode arc. Why do I say all that? Well, Jemele Hill was attached as a producer. That woman cannot speak 2 minutes without 5 lies in there. ESPN positioned it as a cultural project until it wasn't. I remember Kaepernick, on a side note, I was still in the business. I remember making a call to somebody I know. He goes, William, Kaepernick was actually never a leader. He's more of a follower in a leader's position. That's why I remember talking to this guy. He said, Kaepernick's not going to be a good long-term quarterback. He doesn't have the leadership skills needed for that position to be successful as it needs to be. And sure enough, that was proven true. Kaepernick played from 2011 to 2016. He kneeled during the anthem, kicking off a lot of this racist propaganda we have. Opted out of his contract in 2017 because he was greedy. He wanted more money, meaning they were going to trade him. And he refused to take the pay cut, so he let his current contract lapse. Why? I don't know. He never signed again. He filed collusion grievance in 2018. It was settled in 2019. I would have fought all the way. And I would have been in court, yeah, we're not going to sign him. He's going to kill ticket sales. It's not just about winning on the field, which he hasn't done very well the last couple of years against big game, big town opponents, but he's also hurting the ticket sales. It's called business, Judge. Post-NFL Ventures, a lot of racism, a lot of bigotry, Know Your Rights Camp, publishing company, children's book, I Color Myself Different, Netflix series, Calling in Black and White, compared the NFL Combine to a slave auction. I'm not going to lie. I used to go to the Combine, and I remember one day, they're all standing up, putting up shirts and all that. I'm like, oh, my God. And it was in an old Alabama landmark where they used to sell slaves. And I'm looking around. I'm like, am I the only one who sees the irony here? The irony, because slaves were once sold there, and these are these young, mostly black athletes. They were going to go from poor working class to being in the top 1% of the country financially. So, yeah, no. The draft is nothing, or the combine is nothing like a slave auction. It's called tryouts, you racist piece of trash. So the breakdown and cancellation, that happened in September of last year. Puck News reported creative clashes between Lee and Kaepernick. You think? ESPN chairman Jimmy Pitaro, he was open to shopping the project elsewhere. And in the summer, the decision to halt was made. Obviously, the NFL deal was nowhere near being done at that point. But this past August, Spike Lee did confirm the cancellation at a red carpet event. It's not coming out. I signed a non-disclosure. Translation, you can't talk about it. August 16th, ESPN issued a joint statement citing creative differences. Kaepernick's rep declines to comment. Kaepernick's time is coming gone. He's what you call a hanger-on now. So some of the timing questions as to why they canceled it, this is just nonsense. I mean, it does look bad if you want it to look bad, but they're talking about the NFL acquiring 10% stake in ESPN. And the cancellation was announced 2 weeks later with the belief being that the NFL doesn't want ESPN to do a docuseries that makes them look bad. People are going to make of it what they want. To me, it's coincidence. It's that simple. And again, Mark Harris says, nobody was asking for this. And he says it's lighting money on fire. Michael Picnic, whoever the hell he is, ESPN caved to NFL pressure, dismisses creative differences excuses. I dismiss the creative differences excuse. I mean, look, we don't like it. It's garbage. It's you and Spike Lee couldn't even get along and get on the same page. Now, I do believe actor Gary L. Gray, the cancellation is due to woke backlash. Yeah, we're tired of the lies. This wasn't just a cancellation. It was a quiet burial. A project years in the making, backed by Disney, directed by Spike Lee, and centered on one of the most polarizing athletes of the decade. Scrapped with a shrug. They blame creative differences, but some believe the timing, days after ESPN sold a piece of itself to the NFL. Some believe that's not coincidence. That's corporate alignment. Maybe. I don't think so. I think in this case, yes, it is coincidence. Kaepernick's story has been told, retold, dramatized, and monetized. But this time the machine didn't bite and said, no mas. Not another dime. Why? Because the narrative is exhausted. Because the martyrdom model doesn't sell when the martyr keeps moving the goalposts. And that's Kaepernick. And because ESPN, like every media giant, knows who really pays the bills. This wasn't about production delays. It was about ideological fatigue. Even the wokesters at Disney realized another round of grievance theater isn't worth the cost. And here's the kicker. Kaepernick's doc wasn't killed by conservatives. It was killed by the very system that built him. The same system that weaponizes outrage. Faux outrage, then discards his icons when they stop performing. That's the real story, not creative differences, but creative exhaustion. And in the end, the silence says more than the series ever could. NFL buys into ESPN and journalism pays the price. So let's kind of continue this take. Roger Goodell assures ESPN that as part new owner, NFL won't interfere in coverage of itself. That was the title by Armando Salguero. Now, I do believe ESPN's now officially the NFL's PR department. So the NFL's $2 to $3 billion stake in ESPN isn't just a business deal, it's a muzzle. With ESPN now absorbing NFL Network, Red Zone, and fantasy platforms, the league gains an unprecedented influence over the very outlet tasked with holding it accountable. Past concessions suggest this isn't a partnership, it's a takeover. So, let me break it down for you. The NFL acquired about 10% stake in ESPN, valued at $2 to $3 billion. ESPN gained control of the NFL Network, Red Zone, and the league's fantasy platforms. Roger Goodell tells the ESPN staff the league won't interfere with coverage, even negative stories. The deal faces regulatory hurdles, and it's not expected to begin until 2026. I wouldn't be shocked if this deal does not go through. Robert Kraft frames it as a global expansion strategy. My thoughts, this deal should not go through, and I'll tell you why. In 2003, ESPN pulled Playmakers, a drama exposing drugs, violence, and scandal, despite strong ratings. KFFL was at its heyday back then. We'd have the big TV on in front, and editors, managing editors, and myself and my partner, we'd all be working, and we'd have TV on. When Playmakers came on, watch it. We loved it, and we were disheartened when it was canceled and angry because we knew why. Because the NFL pressured ESPN to cancel it because it didn't like how it portrayed the league, even though it wasn't technically the NFL. Everything about it screamed NFL. Why? They had multi-billion dollar contracts and they needed the NFL. Then there was 2013, the ESPN exits the league in denial of concussion. I think that was with PBS. That was another docuseries because of NFL pressure. Then ESPN delayed the coverage of Big Ben Roethlisberger's sexual assault allegations until public outrage forced action. These are just three. There are more out there. This in and of itself would tell me if I was part of the regulatory commission, kill the deal. Because it's only going to get worse. Now, NFL insiders say stories are routinely blocked by higher-ups. Look at that. The league favors compliant reporters with scoops sideline versus sideline critics. Look, John Gruden's lawsuit alleges the NFL leaked emails to the media forcing his resignation. The NFL has tried to bury that from coverage. Look, if NFL Network insiders are saying stories are routinely blocked by higher-ups, that tells you something. And these insiders are reporting the news, giving their announcements. In other words, you better come along and play along. If you want to come along, you better play along. I briefly worked for the NFL Network. My partner and I were their very first fantasy analyst on Total Access. Our relationship did not last long. I kind of burned the bridge accidentally, but well, that's what happens when you have non-entrepreneurs running and producing shows. That's how Hollywood works. But regardless, they got pissed at us because their talent was coming up talking to us, asking us fantasy information. Kenny Norton, Seth Joyner, Rich Eisen tossed the breaking news to us, the fantasy guys, because we were breaking news. My company, KFFL, we had something called Hot of the Wire. We provided all the player news across the industry. Roto World, or whatever they call it, NBC Sports now. Roto Wire. I mean, they were like little peewee leagues compared to the quality of our content. And we had all the contracts. We would break news regularly. I was considered an NFL insider. In fact, I came up with Kaplan, Glazer, Cohen, but that wasn't my shtick. I was building a company. Now that I think of it, maybe that should have been my shtick. But the point being is that they control everything. This just will facilitate ESPN shielding, not scrutinizing the NFL. Investigative reporting, that's done. when it comes to anything NFL. Softened journalism, that's a given. Editorial compromise, oh yeah. Do not expect anything anymore to come from the NFL or ESPN towards the NFL. We just talked about it, the Kaepernick. I think that's coincidence, but in full transparency, you have to bring it up. Look, this isn't just a merger, it's a muzzle. The NFL now owns a piece of the outlet that's supposed to hold it accountable. And history tells us exactly what happens next. Playmakers pulled, league of denial buried, Ben Roethlisberger coverage delayed, Gruden emails leaked to ESPN. Well, I'm happy that Kaepernick, a useless excuse of a man, and the documentary was axed. I can't argue the questions of weeks after the deal was done. Regardless, this isn't journalism. Now it's brand protection. And the timing, it's not subtle. It's surgical. Look, the NFL didn't just buy airtime. It's buying silence of any negative stories. And ESPN didn't resist. It has complied and will continue to comply. This is what happens when media becomes a subsidiary of power. Truth gets traded for access. Accountability gets replaced by PR. And the fans, they get fed sanitized narratives. I pause because I'm like, I'm the fan too now. We get fed sanitized narratives. Curated outrage, and a league-approved reality. This isn't just about football. It's about the solo journalism in sports. Because when the watchdog joins the boardroom, the truth doesn't stand a chance. Think about that. Okay, my friends. I'm trying to think here. Okay, we'll do a couple of final whistles here. Georgia TV station's hilarious typo on the Falcons QB Michael Penix. Oops, I'm sorry, Michael Penix. Yes, I am laughing, and I am laughing because of the fact did I take a picture of that? I don't think I did, and I really wouldn't want to show it anyway. So, I'm looking here in my notes here. Do I got it here? Let's see. No, I don't. Actually, I did, but I can't remember what I did with it. So, here's what happened. Savannah CBS affiliate WTOC aired an embarrassing cry, Chiron. They misspelled Michael Penix Jr. to Michael Penis Jr. Look, Michael Penix was drafted number 8 overall by the Falcons, entering his second season as a starter. That WTOC removed it from the website, and they haven't commented on the error. But fans mocked him on social media. Ironically, on that same day, Penix sparked a fight during a joint practice, so he made the news again. After admitting his words went a little bit too far. My take, man, this isn't sad at all. Or, I'm sorry, this is sad, but it isn't unexpected. It was totally inevitable with a name like that. It's just flat out funny. You know, it's like the Chiron decided to give him an unintended rise to fame, turning Penix into Penis and leaving everyone in stitches. I hope he's a good sport about it. Emma Raducanu, she's a tennis star, ranked 30-something. She stops a tennis match to demand the removal of a crying baby. British tennis star Emma Raducanu, she halted a Cincinnati Open match against Arina Sabalenka. Why? To complain about a distracting crying baby in the stands. And that sparked debate amongst fans and pundits. So, she's 22 years old, ranked number 39. She stopped playing until the umpire, look, baby's been crying for 10 minutes. But prompting the umpire to ask if she wanted the child removed. Now, most fans actually agree with her, so remove the damn kid. Now, others say, well, it's no different than any other sporting event. Now, I support Raticuno. I criticize the parents for bringing the baby to this type of event in the heat. Now, she also received a warning for approaching her coach in Loud Arena amid the Loud Arena music. She lost the match, but here's my take. The real deal is you can't just make noise from the stands and expect to stick around. They're going to boot you out, just like they do in golf. That's how it is in tennis. So why does the baby get a pass? Plus, again, dragging a little one to an event like that in the sweltering heat, the kid's going to cry. Look, I'm totally on board with Tommy Lasorda, former Dodger coaching legend, about how it's nuts to demand dead silence. He was talking about golf, but in tennis as well. When baseball professionals will crush a 90-mile-per-hour fastball with a packed stadium going wild. But at the end of the day, the rules are the rules. Throw the baby out. And there you have it, my friends. A couple of final whistle points there. I got plenty more. What I'll probably do is a final whistle clip for y'all. But I'm trying to keep these podcasts tight right now as we grow the base, grow the show. But before we go, or before I go, make sure you hit like or thumbs up and share this podcast. Share my baby podcast here, Grumlings Media's longest running podcast. Then bookmark grumlingsmedia.com and follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, and Spotify. Until next week, this is William Del Pilar for Points on the Board. Once again, Grumlings Media's longest running show. Until next week, stay safe and draft smartly with your fantasy football leagues.